Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. This morning our talk and discussion is on the three kinds of faith. But we'll begin with a brief summary here, an overview of the Declaration. Our movement, the United Lodge of Theosophists, is a movement, a moral, ethical movement, which invites individuals to devote themselves to the principles, the universal principles of that movement, of the philosophy of theosophy. The United Lodge of Theosophists is an association of those students rather than an organization. It has no constitution, bylaws, or officers. Rather, the sole guiding document is this declaration. And the work that the Lodge has on hand is the dissemination of the principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice thereof to bring about a truer conviction of universal brotherhood. Our basis for union simply is the aim, purpose, and the teachings. The similarity of aim, purpose, and teachings is the basis for unions of all associates of the United Lodge of Theosophists. Yet we regard all people to be theosophists who work for in true service to humanity, regardless of condition, race, sex, ethnicity, or any other condition. All are welcome to be an associate of the Lodge if you find yourself in accord with its principles and are willing to do the work necessary to fit oneself to be the better able to help and teach others. Our program here for the summer is, we have meetings on Sundays and Wednesdays. Sundays, of course, at 11 o'clock, doors open at 10:30. And for the summer, we have been reading a series of articles that were presented about 100 years ago. Today, the article is Three Kinds of Faith, and next week it will be on the renunciation of action. On Wednesday, we are studying the Bhagavad Gita, and our understanding is next Wednesday, is that the last?
No.
Okay, we have, I guess, two more classes or so. But the Bhagavad Gita is the topic for study on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 p.m. Also on Wednesday evenings from 5:30 to 7:30, the public reference library is open, and there's always a student there for anyone in the public who wants to come in and peruse it, or if you have a certain mission, you're trying to look up a line of ideas, there's always someone to point you, help you out in the right direction. The Lodge is sustained entirely upon independent contributions of time, service, and money. We do not pass the hat. There are no dues. There are no fees. But all contributions of any kind are gratefully received. With that, our meeting today is covering an article called Three Kinds of Faith, which begins on page 140. We will have the first four paragraphs read, and then there will be just plenty of time for talk and discussion regarding those four paragraphs or the entire article. Please.
Three kinds of faith. Every human being has faith. Faith in something, some ideal, some conception, some religion, some formula. But while the faiths of different people have one or another object, the faith itself proceeds from the highest and is inherent in the heart of every being. Faith is the very basis of our nature. Whatever way we follow is because of the faith we have, the conviction that it is the best way. that the world is full of false faiths is because of the differing ideas, beliefs, and philosophies which limit faith itself to the means thought necessary for obtaining a particular object of faith. In the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, faith is said to be of three kinds: faith of the quality called sattva, the good and the true; faith of the quality called rajas, of action and of passion; and faith of the quality called tamas, of indifference and ignorance. These three qualities given to faith are, in fact, the three limitations placed on faith by every human being, for the power of faith in itself is limitless. We continually limit that power to its operation within the range of some minor object or ideal based on externalities. The embodied soul being gifted with faith, each man is of the same nature as that ideal on which his faith is fixed. Man has that quality of faith in accordance with his disposition, and he also continually becomes of the nature of the ideal on which his faith is fixed. It is evident then that we ought to be sure of the nature of the faith upon which our ideal is placed.
If one places his faith on any externality, whatever it may be, gods or men, religions or systems of thought, he has placed it upon a broken reed. He has limited the very power of his own spirit to expand itself beyond the limitations of his ideal. When, for instance, we accept the idea that nothing is real but that which we can see or hear or taste or smell or touch, we have placed our faith on a very low basis. There is some reason for our falsity of thought and action when we have assumed the present moment to be the only moment, the outward terrestrial world, and this one existence to be the only life, from which we go we know not where, nor to what purpose it all has been. To look on all beings according to one's own limitation of mind and range of perception, and to see only their externalities of speech or action in accordance, is not seeing them as they really are. An outside God or an outside devil, an outside law, an outside atonement for sins, he did the idea of sin being other than a denial of our own spiritual nature, the unpardonable sin, are all external faiths of the nature of tamas, or ignorance. Ignorance always leads to superstition. Superstition leads to false belief, and false belief to false faith. We are all in constant conflict with each other because of false bases of faith. For the very reason that faith fixed on anything will bring results, and men are blinded to real and true faith by the results of even false faith. Yet so long as we have a false faith, such shall we continue to create for ourselves lives of misery. The results flowing from a false faith in a selfish ideal must bring us bad effects in wrong conditions. They are the very limitations we have imposed upon ourselves by external faiths in other lives, and we must come again and again into bodies until we have rid ourselves of the defects in our nature which those external faiths have engendered. We have to get a better basis for thought and action than the false faith of the likes and dislikes we have obtained by heredity. We have produced the effects we see, but we need not go on repeating the same mistakes life after life if we will but change our ideals. We have to find a true basis of faith. We have to place our faith upon that which is not external, but internal.
We have to place our faith upon that which is not external, but internal. Well, there's a lot of things going on in us internally. What is internal to us that is worthy of placing our faith upon, or worthy of being considered the basis of faith, the true basis of faith? Any ideas? Yes.
Our acknowledgement of that I, that's a permanent basis within us, it's the same I that when I was a small child growing up in Eden, and it's the same I that I am today.
So the contribution here then is if there's something that's constant within us and we can recognize that and use it as the true basis for faith, then it would seem, just as it said in the declaration, we will gain a greater conviction of universal brotherhood. That's because of the work that we do internally. The more that we recognize truly who we are within ourselves, can we then also recognize who our brothers truly are, and that we are really all the same self, ultimately. Yes?
Well, it's interesting, too, because the part was talking about how the finding the true faith has to come from inward. Well, we know, probably everybody here, if not everybody, then most people, probably have known from the time that we were children that the faith of our parents, that there was something wrong, that it wasn't quite right. And then when we were old enough to make our own decisions, then we started on our quest until we came here. So we think that when the part talks about it, internal faith, we're looking at probably an internal motivation that we've had these ideas in the past life experience, and we've brought them forward, and now they're coming through again. But it is from an internal motivation.
So the contribution summarized is those who recognize and have some familiarity or are in harmony or sympathy with this something internal about the individual really is the basis for faith. If it clicks so easily, then it could be because we've been doing work in prior lives. Or it could be really, who's to say? There may have been work that was done on us by our parents in this life, and we don't even know, but simply the confidence that was built up in us by our parents may be consistent with the teachings of theosophy, whether they realized it or not. Now, early in life, does the three-year-old put his faith in himself, or does the three-year-old put his faith in his father? Is it the responsibility of the father to direct that child's basis of faith to the child's internal basis, or, which often happens, rather to direct it toward the family religion as the basis for faith? Is it wrong to do so if it's done with the right motive? Any ideas? Yes.
Well, it's interesting. We're thinking, you know, as we learned as children, we were told, yes, you can ride that bike. I don't know anything about riding a bike, but watch, you can do it. So we were reinforced, you know, taking our first steps, we were constantly reinforced with the fact that we can do whatever the task is. We can call upon those spiritual powers. So in a sense, it was the idea was being given without it being labeled or directed towards a religion or otherwise. We think all of us would be grateful for if we had a religion in our childhood, that it was a good beginning by which to begin to meter everything else, to check it against, which is what the Theosophy invites us to do. But we think that faith that parents have that their children can succeed at whatever the task is or the goal is that universal spirit speaking, as we said, probably without recognition that that's what's going on.
Thank you. Yes?
We recall asking our mother when we were very, very young, who made God? And she was an artist, so she went over and took a piece of paper and she drew a circle and she brought it back and she said, where does this begin and where does it end? It is. And everything is within that circle. And that's the only way I can picture God to you. And we recall that when we came to Theosophy the first time.
Thank you. Contribution has to do with it just is. And that which just is ideally the internal basis of our faith. If we look in the part, faith, and this is an idea that it's kind of neat. The faith itself proceeds from the highest and is inherent in the heart of every being. If faith is inherent in the heart of every being, then what aspect of the human constitution would we find that? You know, it's obviously not our body. It's not anything that changes according to conditions or circumstances. Therefore, it's not our emotions, our desires. Seems like faith really couldn't even be, true faith couldn't really even be situated in the mind, because we change our mind. Our mind, that we understand, consists of the substance of our thoughts, and certainly we change our thoughts all through our lives. So what is it about this inherent faith which proceeds from the highest? Any ideas?
We were wondering about that sentence as well, and we were thinking of Buddhi, you know, the storehouse of all our experience and knowledge, the higher aspect. Because we know that there are all the cave paintings that they've identified as being thousands and whatever years old, you know, that they are spiritual in nature. And so there has to be something in us that is looking inward and just we're thinking it's probably Buddhi.
So it could be Buddhi where this faith is nested or anchored, or where the roots of the seeds of faith truly are. Buddhi being the eternal storehouse of all the wisdom that we have accumulated through all of our lives. That's what a basic explanation for what the aspect of the human constitution is. Buddhi, yes.
But Buddhi is like a locked library without the mind. What's the point of stored wisdom and knowledge if you can't get to it, if you can't read it, if you can't use it? So the mind is not just the ability to think and imagine and remember. It is also a living principle. We are mind beings. So mind is necessary. We just have to clean it up, and then we'll discover true faith.
So mind is necessary for the expression of faith, or perhaps even a necessary vehicle through which faith finds expression and is required for action. The first real action is the first plane of action. It truly is the plane of thought, we are told. Yes?
What part does karma play in true faith? I know that in one of the books it says that if you're fortunate, you were born into a family that is a spiritual family that will, you know, help enhance that desire that you have in your heart. So that's a karmic reaction. But what part does it play in overall? What part does it play in our faith?
So the question is, what part does karma play into this idea of true faith? Well, one idea that comes to mind is that the adept sees the effect in the causes that he sets up. Any ideas coming from that? What part does karma play when we're talking about the true basis of faith? And if an adept is able to see the effect in the causes he's setting up, yes?
Well, we know that karma affects all three planes, physical, mind, and psychic. So if we would guess then if somebody has had these teachings in the past or have been exposed to the same kind of knowledge and say mentally they're maybe not able to really think about these higher abstract ideas, then it would affect it. And so we think that any one or more than one of those three different levels that karma affects could prevent it from expressing itself, or on the opposite, maybe assist it in expressing itself to the fullest.
Okay, so certainly karma can have limiting effects or can give greater capacity to our causes according to our motive, our internal power to make things happen. Let's look at a time gone by when different duties were assigned to the different gods, and if we wanted the wheat to grow, this god was prayed to. If we wanted the weather to be better, that god would. Now, exoterically, there were those who really believed that's the way it was, but the wiser philosophers of the time really knew that all is one. There is one deific principle. It's inherent in everyone, and the power that's engendered around us, really the source of that power is within ourselves. Nevertheless, we're told in the part that even if the faith is placed on, you know, God ABC to make it rain, even though it's a false thing upon which we fix our faith, it still works. We can still bring about the effect. So back to the question, what does karma play into this whole thing as a true basis of faith? It would seem that if rather than placing our, or if rather than using as a basis of our faith an outside God, or, you know, the rules of the school or the laws of the land, rather acknowledge truly the law of cause and effect, and know ultimately there are no favors given. Don't have faith in this savior or that God to make sure that things work out for you. Rather, isn't it empowering to place faith in everything with the attitude, everything that I do, everything that I move on, everything that I cause, there's going to be an effect that's going to come about from that. And the effect is the result of either right action or wrong action, wisdom or ignorance. It's all on me. So it seems like the law of cause and effect, or karma, ultimately is a true basis of faith. Any ideas on that? Yes, in the tie.
Well, it says that all things in nature are gifted with faith. Does that mean that you and I and everyone else has more faith than that plant sitting over under the window?
Yes. We read the sentence. The contribution was that all beings are gifted with faith. Is that okay? It would seem the light and life that is universally diffused, whatever the source of light and life is, it is equal and accessible to all and by all. But the difference is, does every being have developed or evolved within it the instruments that can use it and express it and direct it? So, yes, all the the constituents that a human being has is present in potential in all other beings. The difference is the level of degree that the form or the instrument has evolved to use those principles. In the white, I know their hands up, or the white and then the black and the...
Perfectly expressed, what is the beginning of the next paragraph after you finish reading? The internal is the very source of the powers that we possess of every kind, and that internal is the same in every living one. At the very root of our being is that changeless self, which we can know only within ourselves. So as was said, that deific spiritual essence is within all of life, that can only be self-ideated or known by the thinker, because as was stated earlier, the mind, the key, in this stage of development is with this, at least partially developed.
Thank you. So everything at this stage of development is in varying degrees lit up. One thing that we wrote in the part, it emphasizes three things that are important to know when considering the basis of faith. That each one is the self with a capital S. Each of us is the self in our innermost nature. Again, that conviction of universal brotherhood. We all are of the same source, of the same self. Every power that he has arises from that self, the self of all. And every being of every kind is conscious with the power of the extension of its range of perception and action, while every instrument is due to the limitation of the conception of the individual's real nature. So what it's saying is, yes, we have unlimited capacity to work with the law of cause and effect, and if we maintain that, the law, as the basis of our faith, then it's something that we can grow into to expand our capacities and our ranges. But the limitations we have are not the limitations of the self within us. The limitations are our own self-created limitations of brain power or mind power, our limitations of emotion, because through different lives, we set up certain causes. Because of our own ignorance, nature mercifully limits us so we don't end up destroying the world. But we're never devoid of the potential to achieve that limitless state. Again, it's all a matter of working in the law and with the law. And yes, and we... Okay,
and a mirror image of that, the faith that we have arouses and awakens our own will. And because that is...
We
so,
were wondering if it's really closely related to will. Go ahead.
Yes, it arouses or awakens the will. And once that happens, we can change our karma. So it's like this circle. We have to have faith first that we can change our karma, which then sets up the will and the desire, and we will gradually begin to do that. But it starts with faith.
Thank you. So faith stimulates the will, which brings about the capacity to change our karma, and we're sure... Our understanding by change our karma is not we're going to change what we have coming back to us when those causes are already put in effect, but we'll grow in wisdom and stop setting ridiculous causes in effect that have destructive tendencies. And when what comes back to us that we have coming to us does reach us, by means of faith and will, we will have grown in certain ways so that when we do receive the effects, we're going to handle them in different ways. In that sense, we mean change our karma. We're not going to go out into the universe and stop things from happening to us because we're better now. It doesn't work that way. It's all how do we handle it. In the black?
Well, we have to also think about the title of the part. We're looking at the three types of faith, which is based on three qualities, Thomas, Rogers, and Sacco, which we haven't touched on yet. So when we're talking about limitations, we have to look at the three qualities, too.
when we talk about limitations, we also have to look at the three qualities. Well, we wonder, you know, this faith, which is inherent to the most universal aspect of the human being. However, wherever we're going to find, it's going to find expression through our being, don't we, by definition, have to limit it? You know, to limit it, to get the motions of cause and effect going, there's got to be contrast, there's got to be friction, and so there's got to be a directing of this energy. Now, the sattva, the faith of the quality called sattva, the good and the is the good and the true. Rajas is of action and of passion, and the quality called tamas of indifference and ignorance. Our understanding, when we line it up with the gunas, indifference and ignorance would be faith placed on false idols, false doctrines, ultimately because the individual, what, hasn't taken the personal responsibility to test the ideas and find if they're true. Or if they've really made the effort and find, unfortunately, when I place my faith in this false doctrine, it really does work, therefore it must be true. Because it does. Faith fixed on false idols, that will is still going to set things in motion. So it's really, what's the basis of thought? Is it a basis for universal thought, for universal benefit to all? Now, yes?
Maybe we can look at these qualities of tamas, rajas, and sattva as evolutionary steps that we're working from ignorant faith into in anything outside us, or even a faith, I am my body. That is also To the rajas, the passionate, which is already closer to the self, the people who are driven by their passion to do something good, to the highest level where we realize that the faith into the eternal self, into the being that is the eternal self. And that realization combined with that everybody else shares this eternal self, then we have limited wisdom, unlimited wisdom.
Thank you. So
through that connection, I'm not sure whether I'm saying this.
It's there. So this the second guna, then that of rajas. What was said is that, you know, that could be related to that type of faith placed in action. I have a purpose. I'm going to fulfill it, and this is what I'm going to do in my life. These are the causes I'm going to set. There's a lot to be said for that at this stage of the game. You know, that we should take advantage of opportunities to be of service to others, but it's an evolutionary step, because it seems, in the end, the sattvic position is what all that is going on because of the perfect balance of the universe, and I'm aware of that, and I recognize that, and I observe that, and I work with that. But being more sattvic, there's less rajasic action to cause more to happen. But all of us are a mix of all three, and it's really a matter of determining where you are and how to best relate them. Yes?
And being dual, having the personal and the spiritual aspect, or mind, or condition, what we place our faith on at that time, the lower or the higher, also we think would color those qualities. Rajas is needed, as was said, to do anything. So if we are using it to uplift, to be of service, we think it would be colored differently than if we were doing it to run around and get things for ourselves. And tamas, there's a certain ignorance in the sense of, if I need to do this for the betterment, but I know it will hurt, I need to ignore the hurt, as opposed to, you're not worth it, I'm going to do this for myself. So isn't there a coloring even of those qualities depending on where our faith is fixed, on the higher or lower within us?
Thank you. Actually, the question is asked in the article, are you working for yourself, or are you working for the self, capital S, as you ought to understand you are, and not for anything else? That dual aspect of us, are we working for the self of all in our thoughts and actions, or the I, me, my of the physical world? If you want nothing for yourself, what is needed? If you want nothing for yourself, then what is needed comes under law, comes of the very force for which you make the attraction. Isn't that interesting? When you're working for others, nature recognizes that and makes obeisance and support. Opportunities abound. Yes?
Well, it would seem, though, that we're given the opportunity here to look outside of ourselves. And we have the example of the wonderful plant on the blackboard, brought in, nurtured, put in the sunlight and watered regularly. Well, we have helped a number of people who could not order itself, could not trim itself. It's a very simple statement, and we can enlarge it in our daily lives, because it seems that being who we are, thinkers, perceivers, we have a responsibility to all the life around us. We can perceive that that's sakti. We can be very energetic in it. And only in this change that it will come.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes.
Well, it's interesting. We had initially, when we read in the Gita about the three qualities, we had always thought that there wasn't anything good about tamas. But then we read more over, since then, and it's interesting because in regards to faith, tamas, which is like heavy, and we need tamas, we need to have a form, maybe like a higher aspect of it, as a basis from which to work from, something that will steady us, something that will keep us from flying off the handle. So that, tamas is, it's interesting how tamas is needed for this kind of work.
So it's interesting how tamas, that guna of the quality of tamas, is necessary. Perhaps when one is working in faith to achieve an end, which is the purpose of the United Lodge of Theosophists, to promulgate these ideas to achieve whatever that end in view is, isn't the quality of tamas necessary? With respect, isn't it necessary to maintain focus on the purpose, ignore the personal differences of opinion? This is how we ought to do it. This is why do we do it this way? We should do it that way. Ignore it. There's one purpose. What about this book? I read this. Let's have a talk on, that's outside, which is a very interesting book, but it's not part of the purpose of the philosophy. So that is perhaps the higher use of tamas, and all it really is doing is staying on track with the purpose for which the lodge was created. Yes?
We just don't know if the philosophy would agree with the idea that that should be the basis upon which we work. We agree with what was said, that it is a necessary. help us return to the basis, which must be those eternal truths.
Sure.
That should be our anchor, and all of the conditions we battle along the way are what we use and need rajas and tamas for. But we thought we heard it said that would be a basis or an anchor for the
foundation.
But if I thank you, perhaps we misspoke. It happens. Yes.
Well, I think of tamas or the quality of tamas in faith. It seems like a blind faith for someone who has grown up in ignorance, never heard about the eternal self, and grows up in a religious environment of well, you go to church, you believe in God, you believe in the angels, and so on. But it's blind faith. It's based on ignorance and based on what your parents are telling you. But it's also a good thing, because eventually it will lead to the next thing.
Yes, right. So it's all where the individual is, isn't it? Just because it's blind faith on the one hand, that doesn't mean that external object upon which the faith is fixed isn't going to bring about the object of the faith. And our point simply is, if the person in an incredibly dogmatic religion maintains a certain piety and a faith and a way of living and an intention in a given life, isn't that individual setting up certain causes by living that virtuous life which creates the family into which he or she is going to be born into in the next life, and there will be those in that family who will help make the adjustments, help find the true basis for knowledge, the true basis for faith. But the individual never would have earned the opportunity if they hadn't lived the life outwardly, even though their intellectual understanding of the whys and wherefores was not the universal teaching. But they do create the causes.
I wanted to go back to the idea of Thomas and his contribution or his application. Being ignorant of not knowing. Many things are accomplished because the person accomplishing them has never been told that you can't do that. He is ignorant to that fact. A perfect example of that, and I mean it's in the music line, but a perfect example of that, there was a young trumpet player whose brother played tenor saxophone. He would take his brother, because they're both B-flat instruments, he would take his brother's music and use it to practice. And there was no one around to tell him that you can't play that high. You can only go to G above the staff. He's playing that high. So when he goes out into the world and he's playing like that, everybody's looking at him and saying, well, what are you doing? You can't do that. This is B flat. Yeah, but it's tenor music. It's not your B flat. But no one ever told him before that he couldn't do that. The quality of Thomas had been his assistant in achieving something that wasn't supposed to be achieved.
Thank you for the contribution. It's been heard. Thank you.
I just seen this week that the statement I seen mentioned that it might be useful to have faith in the force that governs and puts motion in the galaxies. Might also be able to assist me in my daily affairs. It was helpful for me to see that. And this morning session is reminding me that I might have enough ignorance for blind faith. I ought to try that. Thanks.
You might have enough ignorance for blind faith. Put your faith in the law of cause and effect, we're told. And we may not be in the place where we can clearly see the effects of our causes before we set them in motion. But in certain ways, if we step outside of ourselves and observe what we're doing, can't we really at least see an outline of probably what's going to happen? And if we make the effort to see that outline, would it help us to adjust the causes we set up? There was a hand over here in the green. Yes.
Another example of having the blind faith, as you mentioned, someone who is very religious and lives the religious life and then in the next life is born. Sometimes, often it happens in the same life. I was reminded of Teilhard de Chardin, who became a monk. And he stuck to it to the rest of his life. But what he came up with, I mean, he realized all the philosophical things about the oneness of life and God is in everyone and so on. He had ideas that he couldn't publish during his lifetime.
Yes, so that
but
next...
He reached that faith in himself and in the eternal self in his lifetime.
And so if the individual, right, so the contribution here is, does the individual have to wait until the physical body dies that he's reborn into another nuclear family? Symbolically, we left the door open when we mentioned that, we think, because really, when a person is ready, that family he may already find around him. Within the associates, the friends, the co-workers, he'll see things in them that he never saw before, had no idea. And it is the idea of a second birth or a born-again, not a born-again Christian, we're not going there, but this certain realization, the veils have been pulled back in certain ways. And so there is a death of the old way of being and a rebirth into, we don't want to say a new way of being, but really the actually older way, how he used to be before he clattered himself up, right? So that new family that he's born into, certainly it's recognized, can happen when you least expect it. There's been a hand. Yes?
Just going back to the idea of Thomas, I think even though there is a great chance of evolving through it to the higher face, there's also a great danger in it that people who have this ignorant or blind faith and realize it, and lots of times instead of going on to the higher face, they just reject faith altogether because they realize this is not the best faith to have, and then they sort of discount faith altogether, and which is kind of devolving down, and they don't get a chance to go up because they rejected because all they knew was the blind faith. And upon realizing it's not the true faith, they just reject the whole idea together.
So the contribution has to do with, but isn't that kind of a dangerous thing to do, just to, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater? Well, we don't like that analogy. But sometimes, you know, it's all cycles. It's all cycles. Sometimes you have to rip it down before you can rebuild it. And, you know, there are those, then Tomasic, you know, it's even beyond Tomasic is that use of faith and false doctrines when you know it's a false doctrine and you're deliberately using it for what's going on in the world today. And it gets crazy, but yes.
You know, every time we come to this room, we hear. And we listen, and then we try to apply. Well, the reason we're sitting here is because of nature is gifted with these three kinds of things. We got up this morning, we didn't have to stop and think about it. We had breakfast, and on our own, we didn't think about it at all. And we repeat it day in, day out. That's not blind faith.
That's not what?
Blind faith.
Okay.
Because it says everything in nature is gifted. What we have to start thinking, we do have a gift. Now, since we have this gift, we have to think about how we will apply it in our daily life. But if we consider that we ourselves are that, recent read of the help given to Haiti. We could mention the Times word said before we leave the house. So we are, great nature is given. We are the ones that have to choose how we use this gift.
Thank you. Thank you for the contribution. The lady in the white.
Going back to the previous speaker's thought that giving up of faith altogether, Theosophy offers the doctrines of hope and responsibility, that karma being responsibility, that soul must have the effects of those actions put forward without faith or with blind faith, you know, any of us. But we can't lose faith that there will be another dawning for those ideas to come forth, because reincarnation is our sense of hope that although these blind faith objectives were put out and must have their return, we are at every moment surrounded with our teachers and those that we can teach that will perhaps spark that idea. And in another lifetime, in another situation, in that lifetime, there is the opportunity for that principle to be seen. Whether or not it's realized, it says even when we hear these ideas in these rooms, it energizes and unlocks a little bit that door to keeping that inner essence hidden from us. So we can have faith that as such a soul moves through life, if we are karmically blessed with the opportunity to sit next to them one day, offer an idea, offer a phrase, a thought, did you ever consider such? I heard this. And at least we know perhaps that little spark, that ember is still there. The future blossom of that will at some time happen.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes?
On the same subject, I don't know that we could actually abandon faith. I don't know that man could actually abandon faith. Too much of what happens to him, too much of what he does, as the speaker said earlier, depends on faith. When we take food into our body without understanding how the full digestive tract works, we have faith that it will be broken down and the parts that we need will help to nourish our body and rejuvenate it. The parts that we don't need will be expelled. And this is without any scientific, I've studied it under the microscope, or I've studied with so-and-so. This is our faith in how things go. Standing on a corner, waiting for the light to change. Traffic is thick. But when the light changes, we cross that, we put our feet in the street, thinking and having faith that we're going to reach the other side. So faith seems to be almost inherent in the very makeup of us.
It's inherent in the very law of cause and effect. I've been eating peanut butter and jelly for 46 years. I know when I eat another one, everything will be fine. And the law of cause and effect. However, if there's a food that I've never seen before and don't even know that it's a food, are you going to have the same faith that it's the right thing to eat at the right time? No, because you haven't observed, you haven't recognized how it affects our body. So behind what the contributor was saying is the faith is placed in the law of cause and effect. And the more that we're aware of that in our lives, the more we can use that, which is the true basis of faith. There was a hand in the white and then the black. Yes.
I think this is absolutely true. I can't agree more. It's interesting to note that the person who abandons the faith of his childhood, that has been said, still has faith in something else. And we have, and I say we because I include many others, have encountered countless people over 50 years in Theosophy who have come to Theosophy because they have abandoned the faith of their childhood. this freedom of thought and whatever, and come to the philosophical idea. So, you know, blind faith, whatever.
Certainly the philosophy would not encourage anyone to accept any teaching in theosophy on blind faith. Accept nothing unless we've proven it to ourselves, or there's plenty we haven't proven to ourselves yet. But don't accept it as fact in every situation, in every condition. And accept nothing that anyone tries to get you to believe unless you have good reason to accept it. That's the idea. And it's all the impersonal law working in our nature rather than the personal interpretation of ancient doctrine. Yes?
Well, that's the story of the childhood. We apply terminology in the wrong way.
We apply terminology
in the wrong way,
wrong interpretation.
So, wherever people are gathering today, it are secular. They call that the faith. That's your faith, it's my faith, it's my faith. But here, we are learning that everything in nature is different. And when we find that out, then we begin to think for ourselves. And we just don't call everything a faith.
Thank you. Okay, we're slowing down. A couple more minutes ago. Okay. In the article, he says that we continually become of the nature upon which our faith is fixed. We continually become of the nature upon which our faith is fixed. What's that mean? Yes?
There was an experiment. It's in one of the books on the Dalai Lama that there were conversations recorded, and there was a scientific experiment where they took a group of folks who did not know or could not possibly learn and apply this formula. And they took half of them and repeatedly told them, you can do it, we have faith in you, we have confidence in you, and the others were repeatedly told the opposite. Within 2 weeks, the positive reinforcement of faith and confidence and will proved that these folks were able to use this formula without any teaching applied. That they charted that the brain chemistry had actually changed, and were able to prove this. So as was said earlier about will, whatever we believe we can do, we achieve, whether we thought we could the day before or not. It's putting that spiritual dynamic energy that we are into motion with purpose, intention, the right motive, and seeing the results under law.
Very interesting. You know, there's that statement, you know, if you have enough faith, you can move the mountain. And, you know, as a child, we always think, you know, like moving a mountain, that's ridiculous. Well, there's a lot of internal mountains to be moved. How else could they possibly be moved without faith? Later in the article, Mr. Crosby has a particular paragraph that seems to hit a chord that we'll wrap up the meeting with. It says, those who follow the path of true faith are not drawn away from their fellow men. One's fellow men are more to him than they ever were before. He sees more in them. He sees more clearly the difficulties under which they labor and desires to help them in every way. So he's more of a living man. He acts more knowingly than do the rest. He gets more from nature than they do because he sees the whole and the aspects of the individuals that compose the whole. He gets as much out of this life and more, far more than the man who lives for enjoyment and happiness, whose ambition is for himself. But he lives not for himself. The whole aim of his life is that men may know these truths, for he knows that knowledge means the destruction of false faiths, and hence of all the suffering and horrors of physical existence. Then evolution will go by leaps and bounds. Men will be extricated from the places to which they have consigned themselves and move on without limit in a universe of infinite possibilities. Our meeting is adjourned.